Got it. Bucky's Auto Service Center. Thank you, Dan. Wow, crazy, huh? All right, Bucky's Auto Service Center's Tom. Let's do a quick review. I can't hear you.
Oh, wah, wah.
Let's quick to testing. Testing. Oh, okay. I get my own show. Hey, go to you get another microphone.
Here,
Ursa will
just
share.
Use my hair.
Ursa's going to share his microphone with you. Get in there and enjoy some of her germs. There you go. Oh, you cleaned it off, did you? Tom, testing again. You know what? All right. I screw it. Who cares? Hang on.
How are you?
How about we've silenced Tom?
There we go. Microphone. I mean, I'm not better than you guys.
It's like a real radio station all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go. All right. Hey, Hannah, did you sit through the entire thing? How long was the speech?
So the governor's part, after you got through all of the speech itself was about a little under 40 minutes, I think.
Okay, okay.
There was a lot of ceremony and stuff that went on prior to that. But, about that. And, Governor Inslee stayed at the state. He talked about some of the accomplishments, but really it was focusing on the goals for the 2020 legislative session. And, you know, we've heard this before. Here's what the priority is from the governor.
Responding to homelessness can't simply mean moving people down the road to someone else's city or to the next bridge. It's about giving them the tools and resources they need to get back on their feet. It's about prevention. It's about rent assistance. It's about supportive housing for our most vulnerable individuals.
So we know he's asking lawmakers to pass a proposal that would pull $300 million out of the rainy day fund to really get some emergency shelters up, but also cover some services like he was just describing there. And he's got some really big goals.
Our goal over the next 2 years is to find safe, warm shelter for half the Washingtonians now living under freeways and bridges, in sleeping bags, and in cardboard boxes. This should not come at the expense of building more affordable housing.
Now, getting money out of the rainy day fund is a non-starter for most Republicans I've heard from, and Senator John Braun says here's why.
If the governor believes more tax dollars are the best response to the homeless situation, he needs to look somewhere besides the state savings account. Besides, who can trust that more government spending is the answer? What's happened to all the money already spent reducing homelessness?
So that was the homelessness issue. The other big thing that the governor hit on yesterday was the clean transportation, clean fuel standard that he wants. That's his other big priority.
We need what the rest of the West Coast has already built. A clean fuel standard that calls upon the oil and gas industry to give Washington consumers cleaner fuels.
The governor is pointing to California, Oregon, and I think up in British Columbia, where that clean fuel standard is worked out to about an extra penny a gallon, let's say, in gas. So it's not a big hit financially, he says, to the consumer. But Republican Senator Mark Schussler does not see that way, and he's not alone as far as Republicans go.
Really mattered was the only thing we heard about transportation was the gas tax without roads, better known as low carbon fuel standards.
Now, he says it could go as high as 57 cents a gallon. And what he was also saying there, and some other Republicans pointed out, is that you didn't hear anything in the State of the State yesterday from Governor Inslee about I-976 and transportation funding. So, as we know, he's paused a variety of projects, transportation projects across the state because of I-976. I've just spoke to another Republican this morning who their take is kind of that, that wasn't necessary. There are other ways we can deal with this. And it feels like to them that the governor is punishing those who approved I-976 at the ballot. Mm-hmm. The governor would not say that's the case, but.
Look at
there
Tom
you go.
All the way over there.
Okay. I know. You're
testing,
so far.
Testing. Can you hear me now?
I got you.
You don't have to start every sentence with testing, testing.
No, I swore that's what you told me to. No. At the 9 o'clock hour, you said every line should be testing, testing.
Well, we're supposed to be testing our audience at that
testing,
point.
Testing, testing.
Okay.
So my understanding is that the Democrats, they have the majority in both houses, so they can do a lot. But what they can't do without Republican help is to raid the rainy day fund.
That's right. Well, yeah, they have to have some Republican help, and it's a two-thirds majority that's needed, and I don't know that the votes are there right now. We'll have to see.
So that's the big question, because a lot of Inslee's plans have to do with, going after the rainy day fund.
Mm-hmm. And that's for homelessness, not for transportation, I want to be clear.
On the homelessness.
And he said at the legislative AP preview that I went to last week, he said, look, I'm not wed to that being the way that we have to pay for this,
okay,
but I'm wed to this happening. He wants that, you know, half the homeless population.
Because that was my follow-up question. The Republicans, again, on the Seattle Times summary of what you attended yesterday, said the Republicans and the Democrats agree on what the major issues are. Yep. It's like the Republicans weren't saying, forget homelessness.
No, not at all.
The cities they dealt with it. They, it's just the funding of it or how you go about dealing with those issues. So to me, it was more hopeful than not. That at least they identify the same problem. A lot of times the parties see different problems. They identify the same problem. The problem is the dispute will be how are you going to address the issue of homelessness and how are you going to fund it.
And I'm going to liken this to I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm going to liken this to what we saw with McCleary. Right, everybody agrees.
Yeah.
We got to fund education. It's how do we fund it that's the issue. Okay. And the approach to homelessness. You know, Republicans were quick to say yesterday after the State of the State they want to do more things like get to the root of the problem of homelessness. They want to see more accountability when it comes to some like folks like prolific offenders, people who are just circling in and out and not getting the treatment they need, things like that. And then also making it easier to build affordable housing, affecting the changing the Growth Management Act so we can get more supply, not cracking down on landlords and various other things. So there's disagreement on the how.
Not to put you on the spot, but I'm trying to figure out when was the last time we raided or took money out of the rainy day fund? And is there a specific one that people agree on? I was just looking at the Article 7, Section 12 of the Constitution says that they have to remain to have a certain amount of money, the budget stabilization account. So it's sitting in there. I guess they go to it when they go into a recession.
Right. And that's what it's for. It's for an emergency for in the recession. So I would imagine I'm not 100% sure because I wasn't here then.
Yeah.
But I would think that if they had to use it, they used it last in the recession.
2008, 2009. Yeah. I think the governor has said that we're not going to raise taxes. Is the economy is doing well and everything's coming in and we got enough money, I think a record amount of revenue.
Yep.
Thanks everybody for working so hard. That the government said we don't need to raise taxes because we're not at a time where we need the revenue.
Right.
Okay. So he takes that off the table. Everyone normally waiting around for the governor to say he's going to raise taxes.
Yeah.
But in a way, they will raise taxes. They do the low carbon fuel thing, the same thing they've done in California.
Again, he says it's a penny. Yeah. But yeah, you're right.
It starts out at a penny. Yeah. I don't think it's a penny in Oregon. I think is it 15 cents?
I believe he pointed directly to Oregon.
It's only a penny in Oregon?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there we go.
But Mark Schlosser will tell you that it'll go up to 57 cents. So there's a lot that goes into that and the type of the formula that it ends up being, what gets passed on to the consumer and all of that. So
they do ceremonial sort of thing the same way when the president of the United States was the president of the United States. Do they really?
It was a big ordeal. So you have Lieutenant Governor Cyrus Beebe. He's up there at the podium. There's a better official name for that. I just can't. It escapes me right now. And then you have the first they had this, I believe it was the Supreme Court. Justices all came in and all got introduced, and it was a thing. And then I want to say somebody else came in afterwards, or before, the lawmakers came in before. Then the governor comes in, and it's a whole thing. Everybody stands. He comes, he speaks, and
does
when he's done,
the
then
does you work in the aisle, coming down the
just
middle,
just kind of a little high there, little, hello.
Okay,
you know,
right.
His wife Trudy's kind of up there in the stands.
Okay,
and when it's all over, then they have to do that whole ceremonial thing again, and he walks out.
Oh, okay.
Then the Supreme Court justices walk out, and it's very formal.
John loves all that pomp.
I did like really. It's pomp. I was like, oh, this is cool.
I can watch him work the aisle. Okay.
I've attended once, and they've also had foreign diplomats in the gallery, which I was always surprised. I feel like as a foreign diplomat, I don't know if that's the most exciting speech you want to be at. But yeah.
I was waiting for Megan Rapinoe to be there because he quoted her there at the end. I'm saying her name right. And I
you get a little tingle. You get a little
funky, it's nice, right? It's
really?
Like if you're it's a big deal.
Okay,
it's a big deal. You don't want to know about the vape ban. Jacob wanted me to tell you about the vape ban.
Okay,
so at any rate, last year, Jacob. Governor Inslee.
I was going to leave it with you all goosebumpy. I didn't know we'd go back to vaping.
All right.
Okay, go ahead.
Cue up the song again. I'll be done in a minute. flavored vape ban that our governor did an executive order for last year to make a temporary ban on the sale of those products, any fruity flavors, things like that. He has now got a bill that is being proposed that would make that ban permanent. It also goes a little further. It has some limits on the marketing that you can use because tobacco flavored
yes.
would still be allowed under this. But that's it. No menthol. So it goes further than what the feds just did. So the new requirements on that, anybody who makes these would have to get a manufacturing license. And there's some other new rules with that. So that's a bill that's making its way through Olympia. We'll see.
And how do people feel about that? Republicans mad about that?
There's it's a there was a feeling of government overreach, and there was also a sense from vape shop owners, because we've already got a tax on vapes, and then they raised the age to do it to 21, so they're already getting hit, that they're going to have to go out of business. A lot of those are small businesses, and it'll hurt their, you know, jobs, people they employ.
Yeah.
But at the same time, on the other side, you've got, this is considered an epidemic among teen users, and then it was, of course, linked to that lung illness that in some cases led to death. So,
Now, in order to get people to drink less soda, are they going to only have tobacco-flavored soda?
I've not heard that.
Just checking.
All right, I'm out.
That could be sweeping. That could be everything.
Ew. Burgers, can I just say, ugh.
There's a marketing opportunity for you, John.
I accidentally drank some tobacco-flavored water. Oh, my God. That was disgusting. You know what it was?
Somebody popping a cigarette in a Diet Coke.
No, I've done that. You ever done that with a beer?
No.
Are you? Is this a
just a little bit?
Situation?
A little bit of, yeah. Oof. It was a Dr. Pepper can. I'll never forget it.
Yeah. And?
Ugh. It was chew. My cousin used to do chew.
And so he got it through that little tiny hole.
They would hold. You ever seen a guy do that? They're very conscientious. As they spit that
little,
thing.
Little stream of spit comes right into the can. Oh, my God.
And I remember telling my brother, and he goes, well, you know the old joke. I accidentally drank it. What? How much of it? Oh, the whole thing. It was all one long string. Oh. But I'm pumped. You've heard that one, right? Like that?
It's happened to me twice.
No! Not in the same can.
No. Different occasions.
Yeah.
Different awful occasions.
Did we tell you you drink too much, Darren?
Oh, my God. It is. It's a life changer. I mean, what kind of can was it? You never forget it.
I believe one was a Monster energy drink, and one was probably like a Busch Light.
Wait, okay, so the Monster energy drink, because usually this is an instance of you confusing what your drink with this other drink.
Yes.
So this was you were drinking Monsters at the time.
I think I just wanted a nip of somebody's beverage.
Oh, I threw up twice.
Okay. All right. A little nip, a little something there for you. All right, Nancy Pelosi. You see how quickly Hannah left when we started talking about this?
That's right.
So Pelosi releases the names. There's seven altogether. Is that who's going forward?
Yeah.
These are six managers with the Democratic representatives. You got Nadler's in there.
Seven.
Jeffries from New York. This is Zoe Loughran. Interesting. She was there when she helped write the articles of impeachment for Nixon.
Wow, is that right?
Yeah. And then she was there for Clinton.
So that's 70s and the 90s. So she's been there all three. She could write a book.
She could write a book. Here's Pelosi, why she chose these seven.
As you can see from these descriptions, the emphasis is on litigators. The emphasis is on comfort level in the courtroom. The emphasis is making the strongest possible case to protect and defend our Constitution, to seek the truth for the American people. I'm very proud and honored that these seven members, distinguished members, have accepted this serious responsibility, again, to protect and defend for the people, defending our democracy.
Now, all the managers are from fairly safe Democratic districts.
Are they?
Yeah. Yeah. Only Crow, except Crow, who won the election by 2 points, percentage points, outside of the Denver area.
Crow of Colorado and Garcia of Texas, both first-term members. So that's quite a compliment. But if they're both, if the idea was we're going for litigation, we want good litigators, good lawyers.
Yeah.
They could be great choices.
She says she's reminding everybody the seriousness of the impeachment.
What is at stake here is the Constitution of the United States. This is what an impeachment is about. The president violated his oath of office, undermined our national security, jeopardized the integrity of our elections, tried to use the appropriations process as his private ATM machine to grant or withhold funds granted by Congress in order to advance his personal and political advantage. That is what the senators should be looking into.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mitch McConnell says 1 week. I think they're going to bring it up there tonight. They're taking the articles up there tonight. And then Mitch McConnell said that he and Schumer will receive them. And then I think, is it next week or whatever? Yeah. They're going to do 1 week. Witnesses or no witnesses?
At this point, they haven't decided on witnesses.
Yeah.
But there sounds like there's been some cracking among the Republican senators that they might be in favor of voting for witnesses. Mitt Romney is one of the four that have been mentioned.
Yeah.
But Mitt Romney said, I'm comfortable with doing what we do with Clinton, which is we'll hear the opening case, and then we can vote on whether we want witnesses or not.
Uh-huh.
So they don't have to have the witness yay or nay vote until after, which gives the Republicans some cover. Because that was Mitch McConnell was saying, no, we're not going to vote up and down right away. Uh-huh. But there may be enough interest in that in a bit. So that might be the compromise.
I think they want to get this thing over with fairly quickly, right? So that
Mitch McConnell does, yeah.
But you want to get the Dems back out on the trail. We got to get those guys out there if they move into New Hampshire.
Yeah, there's almost no way that this will be wrapped up before Iowa, which is 3 weeks away. And New Hampshire's only another week away. It might not be before Nevada that they get out on the road. Yeah, speaking of last night's debate, that was the last chance that we're going to hear solid campaigning from the senators. Bernie and Elizabeth and Amy are all in the Senate, and that gives Joe Biden and Pete Buttigieg free reign to campaign without competition.
Here's a poll for you. 17% of Republicans support Trump impeachment removal from office.
17%?
Yeah.
Okay, that's higher than I expected. Okay.
And as new information comes up from Crazy Rudy, new documents from Rudy Giuliani's associate submitted part of the impeachment trial that they found handwritten notes.
Yes.
Was it the Ritz-Carlton? Is that where they were?
Yeah, I forget now which
the Waldorf,
hotel. Yeah.
One of those.
But Lev Parnas, one of the two guys that were arrested as they were trying to leave the country, their associates of Giuliani. Lev Parnas has pleaded not guilty, but they've gotten access to all of his text messages. And what it does is it further tightens the Trump connection to the Zelensky request or demand that he announce an investigation. That's what the handwritten notes and the text seem to indicate.
Yeah.
It's more of proving or more evidence of what the Democrats claim. I don't think it's not like a smoking gun so much as it is. It doesn't matter. It never came to pass. So the Republicans think that's ultimately irrelevant.
By the way, just to put that poll in perspective for you, so back in October, Tom, it was 14%.
Okay.
It's now at 17%.
So it's increased a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. Okay, we'll take a fast break. Are you happy over there? You're so far away.
I know. I feel like we're like Alexander Graham Bell trying to contact whoever the other guy was on the other line.
Mary had a little lamb. Yeah. Somebody said? I think that's what
he said. Yeah, it could be. Whose fleece was white as snow. Hey, it's National Poetry Reading Day again.
How do you and I know that? Isn't that Jacob, you lost on this? What percentage of stuff, crap that Tom and I say, is lost on you?
Wait, that was just Mary Had a Little Lamb,
yeah.
Right? Yeah,
so
yeah,
you know,
no, that one's easy.
But you know Alexander Graham Bell? That's what he was saying. In
Inventor of the telephone?
Yeah.
Yes.
The very first
You knew that?
Phone
two
call.
For two today.
Yeah, wow.
Okay. Right. It's unusual, though.
I think you're learning.
Here,
I'm spending too much time.
Here, let's have a celebratory drink. Here, have some of my Diet Pepper here.
Ooh, menthol.
Michael Shue Casino, thanks for bringing in Rachel Bell every single day, except for Friday. But the folks at Michael Shue Casino are always there for you, your gambling entertainment. I have a lot of fun there. Great entertainment, and they know that when it comes to entertainment and good fun, synonymous with Rachel Bell. Can someone please tell Tom we're back on the air?
I think he's at Michael Shue Casino.
The show is so off today. We couldn't hear him, so he got all upset, and he went in the other room, and then he ate a burrito weird. Where are you?
Do you think you guys need to go to a retreat together or something to get things back on track?
Well,
like do some trust falls?
Yes, we're going to get Tom to stand up on the thing and I'm going to trust falls.
Yeah. And then you have to look at each other and move your hands at the same time like a mime.
Okay, Ursula, you have to leave. Tom has to get in there. She was.
What do I do?
Huh?
You
just stay right there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Am I in a good place? Is this a good place?
You're fine. The microphone there works.
Okay.
Okay. Man, oh man. You're right there, Tom. Let's not lose Michael Shue Casino as a sponsor. We'll have no money left. We'll be down to one microphone.
No. I'll contribute for my own personal funds. I want this show to keep going.
Okay, good. By the way, can I just add to that for a moment?
Yeah.
So the Democratic National Convention is coming up in Milwaukee. And I had said to Tom the other day,
I feel attacked. Did you say that just because I'm a Democrat? Why are you telling me where the convention is?
I said I want to go.
Okay.
And Tom says, of course, he wants to go. I don't think the station's going to send us. Because they'd send somebody else, like, you know,
News people.
No, they might send you because I got sent to the Super Bowl and I don't know anything about sports.
Okay. How did you get them to do that?
They wanted someone to cover... They wanted someone who didn't care about the X's and O's to cover the social aspects. So there I was, covering the Puppy Bowl, interviewing the mothers of the players. I was doing the color commentary, and you could do the same.
So that's what I wanted to go, and I don't know if they're going to do it. So I said to Tom, because at this point in my life, I don't know how many other conventions there could be. This could be a brokered convention. Yeah, this is historic. Yeah. And I said I would pay for the two of us to go.
I would offer that.
What?
Never offer that.
Why not?
Because then they're going to be like, okay, and they're not even going to try to pay for your way. Are we on the air right now?
Well, I'm bringing it around to the fact that, in a way, it is a midlife crisis for me.
Oh. Wait, your midlife crisis is going to the Democratic National Convention?
Hey, maybe you'll have an enlightenment, an epiphany.
Tom.
Are you going to drive there in a Mazda Miata together?
Yes, with one broken headlight.
You're both going to leave your partners, your wife, and just go to the convention like Thelma and Louise, never coming back?
No, the idea that, well, it does tie into the first story, which is the idea that people are doing different things. It's not like you go out and you end up buying a sports car or a boat or whatever, and you try to relive the years of your 20s and 30s as you hit 55. People are doing different things when it comes to new experiences.
Yes, so this story is from the Wall Street Journal. They call it the virtuous midlife crisis. Forget the sports car and new trophy spouse. For Generation X, it's yoga, meditation retreats, and keto diets. I felt like a big cliche after I read this because I had my 40th birthday last week. And what did I do? I flew to California to do yoga and go hiking with my friends. I was like, no!
Loser.
Yeah, what a big loser. So they're saying that Generation X, as defined in this article, which, you know, where these generations split is kind of confusing, but they say it's 40 to 55. And so they're saying that what people are doing now for a midlife crisis is different because a lot of people got married later and had kids later. So they feel like they already got their fun in earlier in life. They had a lot of time to have fun.
Oh, I see.
And then now they want to stay healthy enough to see their kids graduate from high school. And so apparently doctors, health resorts, meditation teachers, and adventure travel companies are seeing growing numbers of people in their 40s and their 50s trying to change their life after this midlife epiphany that they just want to be healthier. One of the interesting things, in there was a 2017 report from ARP, AARP, and it said the Gen Xers' conception of the American dream is different. So the American dream was always have the house, have the car, the white picket fence.
Yeah.
Theirs is they don't care about expensive things and having a ton of money. They care about well-being and being healthy.
How about experiences?
Yes.
Like traveling and all of that. I mean, that does seem like where the two generations would dovetail.
Yes. It seems like part of this is travel. Yeah. But I'm just wondering, like, for me at least, I didn't have any sort of midlife crisis. That's just the way that I live my life. So I had this for my birthday because I like hiking and I like doing yoga. I didn't wake up one day and say, I have to save my arteries. So I don't know if how accurate it is that people are changing their lives or if this is just how they're living them now.
Yeah, I think it's people, they call them crises. They're really just transitions,
yeah.
I think, you know, which is much less dramatic, but
there are things that occur not just a birthday, but if something happens in your life, something big, losing both my parents, very, very big.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you start to look at your own life and go, well, like, yes, I'm next in line in the old coffin box.
Yeah.
So that's in a firm, not a crisis, but as Tom points out, it's a transitioning point where you realize here's where I am and here's where I'm going to end up going.
But did you make a big change like this Democratic National Convention? Is this something that you, after your parents passed away,
well,
you're
I
like,
regret.
You know what?
That's awfully personal, you know.
Sorry.
No, look. Can I just analyze it for you?
Sure.
Okay. I look at my life and I think, how much longer is Tom going to be around and we're going to be doing this show?
Yeah, exactly.
It's funny. I look at my life and I assume you're dead.
I know.
That's how giving I am.
He's moving on.
But I think to myself, like, how many more opportunities? So it's another 4 years from now.
Yep.
Are we still doing this show? Meh. The rate it's going now? No. So then I think, well, I want this experience. I would pay for it myself. I know you tell me not to do that. But to me, you know, throw out a couple thousand bucks, whatever it is. It's money well spent. We get a lot of laughs. We get a chance to do this. And it's one of these things later on, 10 years, 20 years from now, we look down the line and we're like, remember that? I mean, of course, Tom won't be here. But you and I will talk about it.
I think money is key. Because when you know, people will say, you know, you might not be here tomorrow. You only have one life. You know, do your real dream. And most of the time, those dreams cost money. It's like, how many people can afford to, you know, quit their job and go on this great adventure, or quit their job and try to do their side hustle that they probably won't make money? I mean, you know, to pay rent in Seattle, at least, is expensive. So not everyone can afford to live out their dream of going to the Democratic National Convention
in Milwaukee.
In Milwaukee. Did you know that the Native Americans called it Milwaukee?
I didn't know that. And are you making stuff up?
It's from Wayne's World. Did you know that they called corn maize?
Maize. If you call it corn, we call it maize.
Yeah.
All right. Are you finished?
Forever or like with this story?
With this story.
Yeah.
Okay. You want to get out of here?
Sure. I feel like you're treating me like a toddler. Like you're giving me options, but I don't really have a choice.
Do you want to wear the red raincoat or the yellow raincoat?
Orange?
All right. It's known as Techlash, and it's hitting college campuses. Is an interesting piece that I just read in Fortune, and they are basically pointing out that there was an event that occurred. It was one of these hackathons, right? Everybody gets together. It was in UC Berkeley campus, and all these high school kids and the freshman year kids are walking around, and they've got spend the whole weekend. They're working on a hackathon, right? And Google was there, Amazon was there, all the big tech companies were there, and they had their tables set out there. And the kids are just walking right by. Nobody really wanted to work for them. And then when they had a big auditorium part where everybody went in before the hackathon started, there's a couple thousand kids in there. And this one guy gets up there and says, you realize if you get a job with Google, it's basically welfare, that you will be stuck on that job. You'll take the $100,000 paycheck. And it'll stop you. It'll stop you from really discovering your own unique skills and stop you from sort of launching into a world and really creating something new that will excite you and allow you to move forward in a whole new direction.
Wow. Yeah. So the personal agency issue, the article where we're looking at about Techlash, something that's turned against the big tech companies, is that they are morally questionable. There are, you make a lot of money, but at what cost? And the argument here is that they have maybe done as much damage to society as they've done good for society. And so do you really want to work? Are you selling your soul? That actually is a more intriguing pitch, John, that you were just giving, which is, no, the problem about working for a big company is that big company will dictate where you're going to pursue your own kind of professional interests. If you go to one of these hip young startups, you might be able to revolutionize the world on your own and be freer with your intelligence.
So this guy, it was so sad because the guy's name is Michael Seibel. Working in big tech companies can be a trap.
Okay.
So he got up and gave that speech. The guy that followed him was Microsoft. The guy from Microsoft gets and goes, wow, gosh, I don't know what to say. Tough guy to follow. I'm with Microsoft. And here's what we allow you to do. We don't call it welfare. We don't think of it as golden handcuffs. We think of it as an enormous opportunity. So you could get some young people that would move into the tech field for a little while just to kind of get their feet underneath it.
Yes.
But Seibel goes on to say, you think that is going to be gaining. What's happening is it's going to slowly begin to sort of put you to sleep, right? And then you begin to develop spending habits based upon that check.
Yeah.
And then you are now just one cog in this gigantic system.
Yeah.
So the security that comes with Facebook or Amazon or Expedia, any one of them, ends up sort of limiting you as a human. So these kids that are saying, I don't want to work for Facebook because it's morally corrupt. Mm-hmm. It's the same sort of stuff that was happening in the 90s and early 2000, 2004, 5, that they didn't want to work for defense companies as well.
Right.
I want to be in defense, yes. And now I don't want to be part of Facebook.
Yes. And part of it, I mean, there's a fusion. There's a lot of questions about how many of these tech companies are working with the Defense Department, and do you feel comfortable with that? Also, the way that Facebook, I mean, all the big companies have had really bad PR moments in the last few years where they are not protecting. Facebook had to settle a billion-dollar case or $5 billion case maybe with, you know, lack of privacy concerns and all of this. But the question is, are these big companies doing us more damage? They said just a few years ago, 71% of people thought that the high-tech companies, the big tech companies, were making the world a better place. Now it's down to 50%. And so you've still got people, like my Lyft driver this morning was all, he says, oh, it's a big day for me, that he was waiting to hear if he was going to get a job at Google or not. And so there are still people that are dying. He says, oh my God, that would be so great. There's still people that would be dying to work at these big operations. But there is a kind of some of the best, the cream of the crop are saying, you know, there are better alternatives and we can do more for ourselves personally, but also maybe more in line with our ethics. And they all acknowledge we may make less money. Though one of the great things about these companies is you get you start out the box like at six-figure salaries. Yeah. That's pretty tempting to somebody in their 20s. But they say that we're willing to take less. We're willing to make maybe half that on the hunch that we can, you know, start young, early, fresh, and maybe not have the kind of ethical issues that the big companies are dealing with.
Well, if you get out of college and you have a bunch of loans that you have to pay off, and you're living in your parents' basement, and they kind of want you out of there, and you kind of want to get out of there, and somebody comes along, my nephew is now going to work for Facebook. He was a summer intern being paid $80,000 or $8,000 a month.
Okay.
He made $8,000 a
as
month.
As an intern.
As an intern.
No. Hey, maybe we can quit, John, and become interns.
Yeah, yeah. He's like 21 years old. Very smart kid. And I said, are you going to work for Facebook? He said, yeah, I'm moving to Seattle in June. So he'll be around here in Seattle. But the question is that if you start to make that 185 or 200,000, you start to see yourself kind of accumulating some wealth, you get some debt on the side, you don't want to go. It's the golden handcuffs.
Yeah. So right now the question is tech lash hitting college campuses? Is this going to be a thing of the past? And because just a few years ago, Google and Facebook, you know, they were, you know, first don't, you know, do no evil. Mm-hmm. Well, right now they're starting to get that kind of big ogre sensibility. In 5 years from now, will those little companies that were so moral high grounds, will they become successful enough that they too will then become one of the behemoths? Or will they get bought out by a behemoth and cash in their chips that way?
We'll find out about a police officer that lied to a woman in order to try to get a suspect and what happened next. Shock the conscience of the court. Right back.